Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Are you thinking of adding herbs to your garden this year? Do you have a shady spot that needs some help, maybe? Well, you're going to want to stay with us today because Erin Presley is with me in the studio. She's the herb garden horticulturist at Obrecht Gardens in Madison. She manages the wildflower and pond gardens there as well. They're just beautiful. We'll talk about herbs and shade gardening with Erin today, and she can pretty much answer any of your gardening questions that you might have. So I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Erin Presley, welcome back. It's great to have you with us again.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about the gardens first. What's blooming in the garden right now?
The garden is looking absolutely fantastic right now. All of our crab trees are in full bloom, and of course they, you know, smell wonderful.
Smells so good.
Yeah. We had quite a bit of emphasis on bulb planting last fall. So we have some really great tulip displays, lots of daffodils, other bulbs that are looking nice, and we have had a rather cool spring.
Yeah.
So all of the bulbs have been lasting a long time, which is really, you know, really nice to be able to fully enjoy them and not have them get too beat up or it gets so warm that they just bloom themselves out and are done right away. So the garden is just looking really, really fantastic.
I was noticing that in my own bulb flowers. They're really lasting a lot longer than they normally do.
Yeah,
it seems
nice.
It's just the cooler weather. Well, I know you also have some remodeling going on, and how's the work? Describe it and tell us how the work's going.
Well, we have quite a few projects going on at Ulbricht. We are building a new education center. And because we have so many classes, and we, prior to this, never had a dedicated education space or classrooms, so we'll have, and that is slated to open in the fall. So for a long time, we were looking at a pit, and now we're starting to look at walls, and things are going up, which is very nice. So that is happening, and then we are also in the midst of building some new greenhouse facilities. Yeah. To support the conservatory and also our production space, because we do grow a good number of our own annual and perennial plants for the garden. So that's going on. And then, just to throw in a little bit of extra fun, we're coming down the home stretch on the Garver property renovation, which is not a part of Ulbricht, but is definitely, you know, affects us there.
Right next door.
Yeah. But we're excited.
It's a beautiful old building.
It is very pretty. So they just got the doors and that building kind of sealed up this past week. And I tell you, just everywhere you turn, there's a crane or a construction guy or, but we're all cohabitating very nicely. And we're all really looking forward to our nice new facilities we'll have in the fall.
I know the International Crane Foundation is doing a lot of work at their facility, and they're having a crane watch this year because you can't see any of the cranes. They're going to have a party where you can look at the cranes that are there that are doing all the construction work. Come and see the cranes.
Well, we have a lot of other nicer things to look at in addition to the cranes.
So, yes, you do.
It's a great time to visit the garden.
I'm looking at your June through December list of things that are going on, and it's 30 pages long, and it's in small type.
The
class catalog is
great. Is great, yeah. Next week I am doing a class on, in our wildflower garden, it's a shady garden that right now has a lot of really beautiful spring ephemerals.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, anemones, trilliums, jack-in-the-pulpit. So that's going on next week. We have a spring container class that highlights some of early season crops that people are growing in containers, and there's really something for everybody in the class catalog.
I just opened up to one page, and I see in July you can take a garden stroll with Dr. Death, who's a regular guest on our program, and so he's a really good guy. It'd be a lot of fun to walk with him through the gardens And there's garden alternatives to lawns walk. And man, oh man, it's just everything.
Yeah, if you have really any, you know, interest in any aspect of gardening, there's something to learn from the selection of classes that we have.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? We can take a couple of calls. Cheryl in Wauwatosa has a question, I believe. So let's go to Cheryl. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I love herbs. I have a very established herb garden that I use some old bricks to create a spiral garden. So there's different levels.
Oh, neat. Yeah.
Nice.
It turned out great, but my problem is on one of the lowest levels, I planted chives. So you know where this is going, probably.
Why'd you do that, Cheryl?
I don't know. I was very silly and didn't realize what chives do. So as you can imagine, now after a few years, the chives are starting to work their way up onto all the different levels.
Sure.
I'm wondering, do I need to dig it all out, all those levels, or is there something I can do because I don't want all my other herbs incorporating that chive taste?
Yeah, be just taken over by the chives. And the chives, I mean, they do go pretty crazy. I think a lot of people are familiar with that. So I would well, one thing that's going to help you mitigate that problem in the future is as soon as those chives bloom and they're, you know, they have those pretty pink seed heads that bloom themselves out and then they turn kind of like a dull color, cut the chives back at that point and you can cut them all the way back to the ground. And that will prevent those seeds from being further dispersed in other parts of your garden. So that's going to help, you know, further spreading. And then as far as the ones that are already in there, your best bet is just going to be to dig those out and, you know, contain them a little bit that way. I would never recommend using, you know, Roundup or chemicals like that with your herb garden. But if you can just prevent them from seeding by cutting them back once the flowers are done, that should really help you in the future.
All right. I hope that helps, Cheryl.
Question on that too. So I guess I was under the impression that it was the roots coming up through, but you're telling me that the flowers have been seeding it. Okay, I guess I didn't, how dumb, right? I didn't realize that's what they do. I thought it was coming.
Yeah, I'm sure that the clump that you have is spreading, you know, laterally. But if it's coming up in kind of all over the place, coming up from seeds. Yeah. And there are also sterile cultivars of chives. I think there's one called Forstgatte that is a German variety. So if you checked out maybe even like a mail order herb farm. We work with a place called Well Sweep that's in Pennsylvania. Well Sweep,
Sweep?
Yeah, Well Sweep. And they have, so you might be able to find one of those sterile varieties if you were looking to just kind of start over.
Get rid of everything and start over.
Yeah, and then you wouldn't be fighting that problem in the future.
So, Cheryl, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jim in Eau Claire has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. I've got somewhat of a similar question in terms of containing or hopefully eradicating something known as gout weed.
Yes.
Or bishop's weed.
Yep, Agapodium.
It is the worst.
Yes, and it is the worst.
It seems to thrive in shade. So I heard you talking about the shade gardens. Well, I don't want that in the garden. I'm trying to figure out a way to get rid of it.
Yes. Do you have a lot of other plants in your shade garden that you are trying to maintain there? Or is it a pretty open space that they're growing in?
It's mostly open now. There's a few rhododendrons and maybe some hostas, but mostly it's open.
Okay.
And I've tried mulching and digging and cutting and everything else, and it seems to just keep coming back and back.
Yeah, what I think, you know, I'm always a proponent as much as possible of mechanical weed control as opposed to, you know, Roundup. So I would say, and I know that it is a real bear to be digging those out, but what I would do is maybe have one more go at digging out as completely as you can what's there, and then anything that sprouts after that point, then maybe I would go through and do a little bit of Roundup for what is left over and just be real careful to, you know, avoid your plants. And you might need to, I mean, it's going to be an ongoing battle. Yeah. That's a real tough one to get rid of.
Yeah, there you go. You got a lot of work ahead of you, Jim. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too, today. We are talking shade and herb gardening today with our guest Erin Presley from Olbrich Gardens. Always great to have her come by. And she knows a lot about a lot of things. So give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And you know what? I wish you were all in the studio with me today because Erin brought me something to drink.
Yes, one of my famous concoctions.
Oh, it is so... Now, describe... It is so good.
Well, so tomorrow morning, I'm speaking for the Madison Herb Society. And anybody is invited to come check out their group. And the meeting is at Olbrich, starts at 9. And so I'm giving a little talk on several years ago, I had done the herb garden all in kind of a Mexican gardening style. So we grew a lot of Mexican vegetables and we grew many flowers that mm-hmm. are common, commonly used in our gardens, are native to Mexico. Zinnias, dahlias, lantana, cosmos are all Mexican natives. So we had super, you know, colorful gardens. And so tomorrow I'm giving a little talk on kind of like flavors of Mexico in your cooking and how to grow different types of herbs and veggies that would be used in Mexican style food. So I have here, this is a rhubarb agua fresca. It's a
it's good.
Kind of like just a rhubarb infusion that you take about a half a cup of rhubarb, maybe in 3 cups of water, and you just boil it up just to enough to kind of turn the rhubarb just a little mushy, and it mm-hmm. takes all that nice pink color out of the rhubarb. And then I put a little sugar and a splash of lime in there. And it's really pretty good. It's little mint leaf for some spring garnish. And, yeah.
It is delicious.
So, and half the fun, of course, of doing a talk on a, cooking topic is having samples. So I was up last night and, you know, skinning poblanos and cooking away in the kitchen. It was really a lot of fun.
Well, I'll actually be... talking on Saturday, I'm getting an award from the Wisconsin Garden Club Federation.
Oh,
I'll be giving
a little
talk in Madison tomorrow. So I'm really looking forward to seeing a bunch of gardeners there tomorrow
excellent.
As well. But I won't have anything this good to drink and to offer them, that's for sure. It'll be just words. Just words. Oh, but it'll be a lot of fun for sure. Well, Howard in Round Lake Beach, Illinois. It's your turn. Thanks for calling, Howard.
Hi, Larry. Hi, folks.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to, I had a question about ginseng. I know that wild ginseng grows out east in the Smoky Mountains and in the Appalachians, and I'm pretty sure we have it in our area, but I just wanted to ask, does it grow similarly here in our area in Woodlands and so forth?
Yes, that is correct. So wild ginseng was, especially previously prior to overharvesting, very widespread throughout basically the eastern United States, including through Wisconsin, Illinois. And it grows in a, in a native woodland setting, usually prefers slopes, like north-facing slopes, where it stays cool and well-drained. And the plants need 70% shade to survive or thrive. So you will find them in very shady areas, mesic forests, like sugar maple forests, that sort of thing. There's a lot of, a fair amount of wild ginseng that still grows out in the driftless area of Wisconsin. And I'm not sure where Round Lake Beach is in Illinois, but it is likely if there's natural areas like that near you that there could be some hanging out there.
Yeah. And of course, we are probably the ginseng capital of Wisconsin is of practically
we sure are.
The world.
Yeah. Of ginseng that is exported from the United States, with 95% of it comes from Wisconsin.
Yeah. So there you go, Howard. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Deb in Madison has a question. Let's go to Deb.
Thank you. So I understand that herbs are perennials, and in the past, every year, I've purchased new herbs. But this year, I tried to bring my pots in to my screened porch and remove the screens and had, storms on. but I was not successful. So I'm wondering if it was just too darn cold out there.
And how did you keep the, you brought them in pots, of course. Did you have the pots just kind of sitting out? Did you have a little insulation around them or?
Not around each individual pot. No, I just put them out on the porch. And as I said, it's I call it a screen porch, but in the winter we have storms on the windows. And I don't know how cold it got out there, but they didn't survive.
Did you have them on a table or on the floor?
Floor.
Yeah, that was that may have been your first mistake.
Okay, yeah. I should be up on a table.
What do you think, Erin?
Well, I mean, and we did have some real, remember that, you know, nice polar vortex that we experienced was that in January? So it's very likely that it did get too cold out there. And additionally, there are certain herbs that will thrive in an indoor situation and overwinter well. But some of the real heat-loving ones, like if you were trying to do, you know, basil or anything like that, they're just not going to like any sort of chilly situation like that. Yeah. Other things like maybe lavender or rosemary or parsley that could take it a little bit cooler might do well in a situation like that. But
how cool?
That's the other thing is how cold really was it? I would say that just to kind of hold them and have them just lag along through the winter, you'd probably need it to be at least 60 plus in there. So would really probably like to be in like a sunny window or something like that instead.
I bet it didn't get to 60 in your in your porch, Deb. That was probably the problem. Thank you so much for calling. So you need to get them inside, or you're certainly going to need to, at the very least, make sure they're well insulated. Well, you can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org as we talk with Erin Pressley, the herb garden horticulturist at Old Brick Gardens. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer for Garden Talk. Dealing a bit with shade and herb gardening today on the show, but we'll take some other questions as well with our guest, Erin Pressley from Old Brick Gardens. Always great to have her come by. And certainly, again, questions for her? The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Lily in Waukesha has something for you, Erin. Let's go to Lily. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm enjoying the show tremendously. Herbs are fascinating. I'm with the Spring City Garden Club in Waukesha, and we have a big sale coming up June 1st at Evie Schertz Nature Center. So
cool. That's
something you guys might want to think about. Pretty fun. We do it annually as a fundraiser to get money to plant all the containers downtown in Waukesha.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so come on by. But my heart sank a little when your expert said the Roundup. I would like to offer balance and say there are other things you can do permaculture-wise that don't use any kind of herbicide or pesticides, like, you know, the cardboard lasagna planting. We have to be really, really careful what we're putting into the ground that goes into our water, that will come into contact with people, children, pets, you know.
Oh, sure. I don't think you're going to get any disagreement from...
But when she mentioned Roundup, my heart just sank. I was like, oh, no, we can't promote that. Wisconsin, we need to get rid of all that stuff in our public gardens and our private gardens and find alternatives. And a lot of the herbs today that people, you know, have in the past, people have thought were weeds or not... not wanted in the garden, and there has to be room for everything with climate change, with butterflies and bees.
I'm sure
I would certainly concur with you there. I don't know if you're aware of the gardening expert Roy Diblick from a very, you know, skilled Wisconsin plantsman. And he kind of would refer to pesticides or anything like that as it's kind of like you're going to the doctor. Like you're getting a dose of something really strong that's going to help you get the problem that you have under control, and then you're able to maintain a healthier lifestyle after that. And I think another a real key thing is if you do have problem areas in your garden where you're looking to eradicate something, and I would always, you know, at Olbrich and in anybody's home garden too, our first line of defense is always, always physical removal of, you know, plants that you're sort of fighting, but then find something else to go in that area. Don't just keep fighting these battles against the same weeds over and over.
Right.
And then, put in ground covers or put in plants that you're, that are going to be able to spread. We use a lot of sedges at Olbrich that make really nice, like green ground cover, kind of like a living mulch. And so if you have something there that you can put back in that's going to hold that spot and compete against your weed problems, that's
the best way.
Yeah. Don't just keep trying to maintain these empty areas and fight the same battle over and over.
Lily, you had something about comfrey as well, did you not?
Mint and comfrey. If you can get a really good established comfrey border up, it's going to not kill all the weeds, but it will certainly
out-compete. Right.
You know, and mint, all you have to do is put mint down. Mint is so, it goes everywhere. And then later on, you can just cut it all, dig it up, you know, and put whatever else you want to put in there. A lot of border gardens are so much better than pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
But comfrey also is really friendly, like chickens, people that have poultry. And I just love the whole herb revival that's going on. I was reading recently about Charlemagne's garden, how they had thousands and thousands of herbs that people don't even know what they are now.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And how many herbs are out there, Erin?
It really depends also on your definition of what an herb is. You know, you can take a more limited approach and just think of, you know, culinary herbs or medicinal herbs. But I prefer to think of herbs as any plant that has a direct relationship to humans in a useful way. So mm-hmm. I would consider, you know, plants that are used for dyes, like herbal dyes. Those are definitely herbs. When you really start delving into it, I think almost any plant in my book has some herbal elements.
And thanks again, Lily, for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, when you're starting an herb garden, let's talk about that a bit because, I mean, people are starting their gardens.
Yeah, it's time.
Right now. What about it?
Well, I would say that there are certain plants that you are going to want to buy established plants of. If you're looking at things that grow a little bit slower, like lavender or rosemary or sometimes like, certain types of thyme are going to do better for you and give you better results if you buy them as a plant. Whereas other things are really easy to grow from seed, like basil is easy from seed, parsley is easy from seed. So you're going to want to do kind of a combined approach. One of my favorite things to do is I will sow basil seeds, which you can start doing right now, but then I'll also buy one basil plant from a greenhouse. So I have some basil right away that's ready to go and get started. But then later in the summer, I can look forward to having, you know, a bumper crop from all the basil that I sowed in the garden. So a combined approach is nice like that. And then, you know, herbs are great, too, because they like it, you know, nice and hot, and they can take a little bit of dry weather, great for container gardening. So there's really no reason that, you know, almost anybody can have some sort of herb growing in their life, hopefully.
Even if all you need is a window in a place.
Yeah.
You can do it inside. Pat in Milwaukee, we'll go to you next. Hi, Pat.
Oops. Hi.
What can we do for you today?
Well, I told the person one thing, but I had two things going on.
Okay.
Number one is I have ants that I can't get rid of in my front yard. I tried the natural way, borax and vinegar and mint, and they keep on coming back.
Well, and the ants, are they big mounds?
They do.
They make big mounds. Okay.
What bothers you about them? Just that they, do they get into your house, or why do you consider it to even really be
because
an issue?
Destroying my grass. I don't have grass anymore.
Oh, they're kind of burrowing and making their big. Yeah, I have never personally fought an ant problem like that, and about the only thing that I have ever heard people do is pour boiling water in the mounds. But then I think Phil Pelletieri was saying, well, what do you think is like, that actually sounds kind of dangerous, like you're traipsing out to your yard with a 5-gallon jug of like hot boiling water straight off the stove, so...
Well, it is a and frankly, you just can't pour boiling water over the top of an anthill
and expect it to do anything.
Because the queen is way down, and you need to, if you want to kill the queen, you have to, you know, like literally take rods, take a metal rod, pound it right into the anthill, maybe two or three places, and then if you poured the boiling water down, you might have a chance to get down to the queen, because... If you don't kill the queen, you're not going to get rid of the anthill.
The colony will just revive itself.
Yeah. So that's as good as we can do. Well, what about planting plants for under pine?
So you have a lot of shade there, and it also, I'm assuming, is pretty dry. So some good plants for dry shade include hostas are always, you know, good, easy solution for dry shade. There's also some really nice kind of specialty plants. Epimediums are low-growing, semi-evergreen plants that are bloom early in the spring, and they are blooming right now. So epimediums are really good. Also hellebore is another very early spring-blooming shade plant. That Lenten rose is the common name for hellebore because they're one of the earliest plants mm-hmm. to bloom in the shade. So those are all real good for those dry shade-type environments, like underneath the pine tree.
Pat, does that help out?
Oh, it sure does.
All right.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I think one thing I like about herbs is the scent. And there are some – what herbs bring out the most scent in a garden?
Well, I love, you know, somebody had mentioned before about using mints, and obviously mints, although they're known for their kind of rampant spreading, there's nothing like being able to go up on a hot day and have a little crushed mint and smell it, or use it in your, you know, an herbal infusion. Larry's eating his mint out of his drink I brought him just now. So that's a favorite, of course. Similarly, for something that is just kind of around that you can experience on a just sort of passing through your garden, our chamomiles are really nice because they grow in like little cracks in paving stones and kind of self-seed around and sort of come up, you know, in unexpected locations. And then anytime you're, you know, stepping off your pavers and step into your chamomile a little bit, you get that nice chamomile whiff.
I like that idea. Well, we have a Heather online from Madison with a question for you about herbs, I believe. So let's go there. Heather, hello.
Hi, I'm wondering what kind of herbs you can plant in a strawberry pot.
Oh, I think...
You know, any, with the little holes in it.
Yeah. Any type of creeping, you know, creeping thymes or things like that that can fit in those little gaps and then kind of spill out work well. The one thing with strawberry pots is sometimes when you start really filling them up, they're hard to keep watered. So one thing that I've done is put in the middle of it, a core of some really absorbent material, like an extra little bit of peat moss or something that will really help it hold some extra water there in the middle. So lavenders or rosemary that are, you know, like it hot and dry also do really well in strawberry pots. And then if you're able to keep it well watered through the course of the summer and it doesn't get too root bound and, you know, you're attentive to it, anything like, you know, parsley or basil will do really well in a strawberry pot as well.
All right. Heather, does that help?
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments. Are you trying any new varieties, by the way, at Olbrich this year, herb varieties?
Oh, I am, yeah, doing some really, so we're talking about chamomile, and I'm trying, we grew from seed a German variety of chamomile, Bodegold, which is known for having larger flowers and a higher resin content. So it's like especially, you know, odoriferous and also nice ornamentally because the flowers are a little bit bigger. I'm trying there's a gentleman, Brent Horvath, who has a perennial business, Intrinsic Perennials, and he also does plant breeding. So he has got some new dwarf chives. There's a little one called Chivette, which is just flowering right now. That's really fun. And I'm also growing, we started from seed in our greenhouse, they're alpine strawberries. So they're actually kind of like an ever-bearing strawberry. And the strawberries themselves are actually white, and they're supposed to have a pineapple flavor. But one thing that I had read that I'm curious about is apparently the little chipmunks and rabbits are not as attracted to the white fruit because they don't recognize it as well. So because we definitely have
lots. I think it's not ripe yet.
Yeah, we have lots and lots of critters at Olbrich. So anytime I've done strawberries before, they pretty much just get demolished by something or other. So those strawberries, I think the variety that we have is called White Soul. And there are just little babies right now, but maybe we'll see a few berries yet later in the summer.
And where are they planted? I have to go take a look.
They are, so we have at Olbrich a really nice little patio that has a reclaimed sign actually from a UW agronomy building. Mm-hmm. And it has, it's this big limestone sign and it just says seeds on it. So we built a patio around this seed sign and they're kind of scattered around the edges of the patio there. So,
very cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's take another call. Diane in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Larry. Nice to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
I'm calling as a representative of the Herb Society of America, the Wisconsin unit. We're having a herb fair at Berner Botanical Gardens tomorrow from 9 to 3. And we will have we have thousands of plants for sale, and we have a tea room. We have classes at 10 and 11, and we're welcoming everyone that's interested in herbs to come.
Sounds fun.
That does sound like fun. Diana, is there something online that people could just go to for even if they wanted directions or whatever?
Sure. It's at Berner Botanical Gardens, but you can go to our website is called herb-society-wisconsin.org.
herb-society-wisconsin.org.
Yes.
Got it. Thanks, Diane.
Well, thank you for taking the call.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. You folks just finished a sale.
Oh, yes.
I drove by on the and the driveway, the parking lot was packed.
Yes, we have. So every year we have plant sale with the pros, and this was actually the 50th anniversary of the plant sale. So it's just a great sale. Happens on Mother's Day weekend, Friday and Saturday every year, and the plant sale this year was wildly successful. I think it had been so cool, you know, prior to last weekend that nobody really had gone out and done a lot of planting yet. And then the sun opened up on Friday and Saturday and the weather was nice. And man, the plants just sold. It was great. And it's a really great opportunity because we have all of the experts from our staff and many, you know, knowledgeable volunteers are there at the sale helping people make plant selections. And then we also really try to source a lot of plants that are unique to Olbrich or plants that we really enjoy using.
Yeah.
So if there's something that you see in the garden or, you know, kind of up and coming type plants, we really do our best. I do all the ordering for the plant sale. So I really try to promote it because it's I'm just always trying so hard to get stuff that is kind of cutting edge or unique or that I think, you know, people should be emphasizing more in their gardens. So we were just so grateful to have such a good plant sale. It's always a lot of fun, too.
Oh, for sure. Andrea in Bessemer, Michigan, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me on. I got a question.
Okay.
So I've got my place up in Michigan. Big winters, lots of snow, lots of cold. But when I plant something, I like to do it once. Do you have any suggestions for perennial herbs that I could plant and would be winter hardy and like really winter hardy?
Sure.
Yeah, we're talking about the UP here.
Yeah, that is getting cold up there. One thing that I would say is probably going to be useful for you is to try to look at herbs that, well, chives definitely are very hardy. And also try some herbs that are going to self-seed. So they'll be, like we were talking about, chamomile. Chamomile grows, you know, the first year, and then it sets seed, and those seeds kind of travel to other parts of your garden, and they, you know, regenerate and overwinter that way. Parsley is kind of like that, too, where it can, if you can get it through even one winter, because I believe it is a biennial, and get it to the point where it will flower and set seed, or just, you know, sow the seeds yourself and then let it kind of come back from seed every year. And plants like that are kind of fun because they just appear in interesting places in your garden sometimes, unsolicited.
That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah. And then, so those are some options as far as things that are more, you know, more perennials. As far as herbs go, that would work well in the UP.
Yeah. That help, Andrea?
Those are great suggestions. I never thought of chamomile.
Ah, there you go.
So thank you, guys.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking shade and herb gardening, and we can talk about a lot of other things with our guest today, Erin Presley. She is the herb garden horticulturist at Olbrich Botanical Garden. She's also managing the wildflower and pond gardens, so we can get into that if you'd like. And she loves salvias and American ginseng, and she loves mullins.
I love a lot of things.
She loves doing this show.
The list of things I don't love is probably a longer one.
So anyway, you can join in with your gardening question at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You are listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Erin Presley, the herb horticulturist at Olbrich Gardens. Great to have her along and looking forward to your emails at ideas@wpr.org or your calls at 1-800-642-1234. There's one open line for you, but let's go next to Heidi in Green Bay. Heidi, hello.
Hello.
Hi. What can we do for you today?
Well, I have kind of a strange question. Are any of the herbs that you're talking about, would they be considered invasive? Or like, you know, how things can take over.
Mint would be a good example.
Yes. I would say there are definitely a few herbs out there that need some corralling, or they need some careful placement to keep them from kind of interfering with your other plantings. So we had talked about the chives going to seed and spreading that way. Another one that is notorious for kind of spreading all over the place is comfrey. So that's another one to just keep an eye on and maybe put it in a spot where it's, you know, bordered by some hard surfaces or something like that, that it doesn't have the opportunity to, you know, escape all over. Definitely mint, very well known for kind of going crazy everywhere. Yeah. But aside from that, I'm not really calling to mind any other ones that are going to be problematic for you.
Yeah. You should be fine otherwise, Heidi. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Mary in Milwaukee, we'll go to you next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
The entire front of our house gets pounded with sun all day long, so it's very hot.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a corner that is at the top of our concrete step, so it gets even hotter.
Okay.
And it's boring and ugly, and I keep trying all kinds of different things to get a little color, some kind of life in that corner. But obviously, because it is so hot, everything just dries up, no matter out there watering it every day, all of that. Do you have any suggestions on something that we could put there that can just really take the sun literally all day long?
Sure. So you're going to be probably wanting to look for, drought-tolerant kind of prairie-type plants. I would say that a good ornamental grass is always a nice addition to any landscape. We use at work a lot of prairie dropseed, which is a low-growing kind of fountain-esque, fine-textured ornamental grass that also has wonderful seed heads that smell like buttered popcorn. Yeah, they're very nice. And then as far as something flowering, a really good plant for hot, dry areas is and great for pollinators is butterfly milkweed. It's Asclepias tuberosa, and that has a super vibrant, bright orange flower, blooms in June. Penstemons are really great for hot and dry areas. Coreopsis as well is another one that works really well in hot, dry spots. A lot of coreopsis also have very, very long bloom times. So those would be some options for you.
Mary, have you ever considered putting a tree in the front lawn?
Well, it's actually, would any of those work well in pots? Because on top of that concrete area, I really only have the option of pots.
Oh,
I see. So you're looking to do like a container gardening type thing.
So, yeah, something like that.
Okay, that's a different story. And you want them right next to the ground, or can you put them up off the ground a little bit?
They could be up off the ground a little bit. I could put some kind of a little stand or something like that to get them off the ground a little bit.
Sure. One of my... especially for something really colorful in a real hot, dry area, one of my favorite summer annuals is lantana. And lantanas are kind of mounding, somewhat low-growing plants, but then they're covered in these little round flowers that have, like, within one flower cluster, it'll be like pink, yellow, and red all together. And they're real cheery. And again, we were talking about the Mexican garden that we did. Lantana is native mm-hmm. to Mexico. So the cultivars of lantana that are available are very, very drought tolerant.
So that's a pretty idea. And then you put yourself a nice, colorful, pretty box to put them in?
Yeah, maybe get a little... again, if you wanted to do something, you could incorporate some of those perennials that we mentioned before, or another sort of ornamental grass, annual or perennial in there too, to kind of soften and add a different texture.
Yeah, for sure. So there you go, Mary. Thank you so much for that question. And let's go to John in Richland County next. Hi, John.
Hi. Everybody likes roses. And I planted 6 rose bushes 4 years ago, and I lost 2 of them. But Wisconsin winters, I covered them up here in zone 3, or is it 4? But I covered them up with fiberglass insulation, like 8 inches, and I put tires on top of them. I'm going to open them up today. Now, they have 12 different stems that I cut down towards the ground.
Now, let me break in for a second. Do you know the type of rose that you... Were these climbing roses or...?
Well, they're rose bushes.
Rose bushes. Okay.
And like I said, I lost 2 of them, but I found a way putting fiberglass on them, insulation, that they could make it. So now I'd like to know, what is the best way to stem them in pruning?
So when it comes to pruning roses, frequently, if you're having luck overwintering them with your method, they probably are, you know, have living tissue further up the stem. So a lot of times we would just wait until the roses start to leaf out a little bit. So, you know, around now or a few weeks ago probably was when the roses were really getting going, and just cut them back to wherever they, wherever the green tissue is. So the dead parts of the rose will appear black. So cut off all that black stuff down to where you see the new leaves coming out. If you need to control their size a little bit, if yours are really robust and have a lot of, you know, green tissue, you can feel comfortable cutting them back maybe to about, you know, a foot or so. But it is also not uncommon for a lot of roses to die back almost completely to the ground every year, in which case when you cut off all the dead black stuff, you might really only have, you know, 2 or 3 inches of living rose at the bottom. But they're vigorous growers frequently and will come right back and be flowering for you later in the summer.
Yeah, for sure. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Duke in Milwaukee has a question. Hi, Duke.
Good morning. Where can I purchase ginseng root, Wisconsin ginseng?
I would go to, you know, the place that I have worked with to try to grow some ginseng at Ulbrich is there's a very reputable supplier out of Wausau, Wisconsin, and that is Sue's Root to Health. So it's H-S-U, Root to Health. And they, that's usually, if I'm looking to buy like ginseng tea, I buy through their mail order catalog.
And you can get the plants through there too? Are the roots through there too?
Yep, correct, correct.
So Sue, H-S-U,
yep.
Root to Health.
Yep.
There you go, Duke.
Have a good day.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Ben in Milwaukee. Hi, Ben.
Hey, guys. Question for rain gardens and an area that's in the backyard on the west side of the house is kind of dug out for a pond. I'm going to dig it out deeper and fill with rocks. Wondering if you have suggestions for plants that will take the standing water and then maybe trees, shrubs, or other plants to do on the outside. It's a very flooded kind of swampy area.
Okay. Is it? Does it always have water there, or does it have a certain time of the year that it goes dry?
Pretty much always, if we get a good week or two with light rain and a lot of heat, it'll mostly dissipate, but it's always pretty wet.
Okay. So you're going to be looking at a lot of plants that typically would be used in rain gardens. One that I really like that has actually an herbal element is sweet flag. So that has, it's more of a, kind of looks almost like a cattail, sort of like a strappy mm-hmm. looking plant. But that actually has a root that is used medicinally, and it has kind of a spicy sweet flavor. So that would be an option. A lot of plants, they're eupatoriums. So that would be like Joe Pye weed is a common mm-hmm. eupatorium, and they can take a little bit of standing water, and but then could also tolerate the times when that area does get drier. A nice showy plant for wet areas is Lobelia cardinalis. So that's and that has like a vibrant red flower, blooms in June. So those would be, I mean, that would be just some options right there. There's a lot of great resources out there about rain gardens.
Yeah.
So I would just, you know, hit the internet, and even the city of Madison, I know, has a really established rain garden program. So that might be a good place to start looking at some of their plant suggestions online through the city of Madison.
Yeah, good idea. Thanks very much for calling. Cheryl in Bessemer, Michigan, it's your turn. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. You had a question from the lady from Bessemer, Andrea.
About herbs, yeah.
What herbs, yeah. I have lots of herbs. Anyways, obviously chives grow. All the oreganos, I have 3 different varieties. I have margarine, lavender winters over. Rosemary does not very often. any of the thymes. I have, like, lemon thyme, mother of thyme, regular German thyme, any of the thymes grow, obviously parsley, and any of the mints. I have apple, chocolate, I have lemon balm. But lemon balm, you might as well put it in a garden by itself.
It yeah, that's so another one that'll go kind of crazy on you.
Yes, it will, and you might as well let it its own garden.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so delicious and jelly. I make apple lemon balm jelly, and it's so beautiful when it flowers. So I put it in one little corner, and I'm just giving the garden over to it.
Well, Cheryl, I wish I had the phone number of the other woman who called from Bessemer, Michigan, because you two should get together.
Yeah.
That is for sure. Erin Presley is our guest today. She is the herb garden horticulturist at Olbrich Gardens, also manages the wildflower and pond gardens at Olbrich, and she loves salvias, American ginseng, mullins, and evening primrose, sedges, other herbs and vegetables of all kinds. She kind of likes pretty much any kind of plant. And it's great to have her with us. For Garden Talk, I'm Larry Mueller. Welcome to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. My guest today, Erin Presley, back with us. She's the herb garden horticulturist at Olbrich Gardens in Madison. Manages as well the wildflower and pond gardens there. And she knows a lot, frankly, about most plants, flowers, and vegetables as well. So I hope you'll join in with your own questions today. It's time. It's planting season for a lot of Wisconsin. A lot of Wisconsin, not so much.
Sure is. Everybody's chomping at the bit.
Yeah, everybody's chomping at the bit. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And something kind of new for Olbrich, I think, is a party that you're having today at 4 o'clock.
We are doing the release of a collaborative beer that we produced with Working Draft Beer Company, which is over on the east side. And so they had approached us about doing, and it's actually a fundraiser for the garden. So I think $1 from every pint goes back to the garden, and we're doing 4 seasonal beers with them. So the first one is getting tapped today in the afternoon, and it is used fruit from the conservatory. It's a sour beer, and it was made with kumquats. And so I believe the name of the beer is something like kumquat is this. And then it is also going to be served with some simple syrups that also were made from garden ingredients. And then we'll be going on to do a summer beer, I think, that has nasturtium and hibiscus. And then I forget something. I think the fall one is like a fennel stout. So we're excited to go down there this afternoon and have a couple pints and have some of that money come back to the garden, too, which is really great.
And it starts at 4 o'clock?
Yes, I believe that is the time. So we usually typically work until 3:30 at work. So that works out really well for us. We can just head right over there.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun to me. And I might be over there. I have to check my daughter's soccer schedule.
Mm.
And if it works, I will come by and have one of those kumquat is this?
Yes, I think that's the title of it.
Well, let's take a call from Ryan in Madison next. Hi, Ryan.
You guys hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
It's pretty cool to be on Larry Mueller's show. But I am looking for native plants for within a water feature and maybe where I can get them.
Hmm.
What kind of water feature do you have?
It's kind of like a maybe a 10-foot stream and like a waterfall, and then it goes into a pond at the bottom, which is maybe 8 feet in diameter.
Okay. And are these plants that you would be growing in pots that you're sinking in there, or are they going directly into like the clay liner of the feature?
Something within the water feature. So probably pots within the water feature. Mostly for, I guess, shade for, you know, the fish or some cover maybe. So the coons can't get them. But just something that is local, native a plant, maybe lilies. I don't, you know, I'm not sure where I can find them is one of the problems.
Yeah, I think two easy options for you that I believe are native are the water lotus that has the big yellow flowers and the really large, very, they do, you know, sit up above the surface of the water. They don't float. And then they make those cool lotus pods in the fall. And then there's also a native American water lilies as well. I don't typically purchase a lot of aquatic plants, so I couldn't tell you where would be a good flower factory. I know they do carry some aquatics, so that might be a good place to check. Mm-hmm. Give them a call.
And you might try like Klein's. I mean, there's their new place is fantastic.
Their new facility.
And if you haven't been there, it's probably worth a trip over there anyway. It's
an
amazing facility in Madison. You might just give them a call and ask them.
Yeah, I would call around a little bit.
Yeah, there you go. But those are two great plants for sure. Mike in Rusk County, we'll go to you next. Hi, Mike.
Hi. So I heard that you will deal with water a little bit anyway.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd ask if you guys know how to do wild rice to plant and propagate.
Right. I have been interested in trying to delve into that topic as well, because I think it would be really neat at work to be able to have some wild rice that was, even if it was just growing, you know, in a pot, for people to be able to see it. I know that wild rice typically would grow in water that is frequently like moving, you know, up north on like the river edges and stuff, or where the water is kind of moving at the edge of like a lake type situation. So I am assuming that you could just plant it at the edge of any sort of, you know, body of water that has a little bit of circulation in it and is not like stagnant. As far as the sourcing of the seed, I'm not sure if wild rice that you would buy at the grocery store, probably hasn't been treated with everything and with anything, and is frequently sustainably harvested. So I would think that those seeds might just pop. But I really, this is pure speculation on my part. So I really, I'm not an expert there.
Yeah, but even that might be worth a try. But I wonder, I was trying to think of where you could go to find information on that. There's a lot about wild rice just as a plant, but not much about propagating.
Yeah, not growing it, yourself, but definitely worth looking into. The other thing that you could even try is a lot of varieties of rice do not necessarily rely on standing water to grow. They just are water loving. So you might be able to just stick it in a, you know, put it in a pot and keep it really, really well watered and just see what happens.
Yeah, just why not?
Yeah.
What do you got to lose?
Yeah, exactly.
There you go,
Mike.
Little
experiment.
Thanks for calling. Patricia emailed that she has a wonderful raised bed right off the kitchen, but nothing will grow in it except a few chives and mint and a few weeds. It is partially shaded, and she would like to add other herbs. What will do okay in the shade? Also, she'd like to add a cascading flower on the edge to cover the timbers.
All right. So herbs that do well with just a touch of shade are parsley can work well, also cilantro. So those would be some good options. Cilantro, you know, when you grow it once, it seeds itself pretty frequently. So you could plant a little cilantro 1 year and then always have those coming up from year to year. And then you said that your chives are working for you and the mint. I think some things that maybe the list of things that are not going to do well is easier to mention, like lavender and rosemary are both super sun lovers, so they're probably not going to really enjoy that situation, as well as thyme. maybe not going to be too happy there. Oregano probably work well in a little bit of shade. So I would just, you know, the other thing about growing herbs is easy to grow from seed. Frequently, if you buy them at a nursery, they come in small pots that are not very expensive. So I would just get a smattering of things and stick them in there and experiment a little bit. You might be surprised at how well a lot of things do.
What about she wonders about a cascading flower on the edge to kind of cover the timbers?
Oh, sure. Like an annual, you know, a really nice option there would, keeping in the herbal theme, are nasturtiums, which, again, are easy to grow from seed, grow really rampantly, and especially at the edge of a, sometimes they kind of, their flowers can be sort of hidden underneath the foliage, but if it's at the edge of something that is cascading over, that's a good opportunity to be able to kind of see them from the side and really get the full view of the flowers.
That's a nice idea, too.
Yeah.
You can join in, too, by the way. Open lines get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. You mentioned pots earlier, and Veronica emailed from West Allis to ask what kind of pots are best for herbs.
All right. You know, when it comes to basically for any container gardening, I think a little bit bigger pot is easier. Just because it's easier to keep watered when those really hot days of the summer come. But as far as material, you know, anything goes really. Good drainage is always important when you're looking at any sort of container. So make sure that the pot that you're considering has a drainage hole in the bottom. And also, you know, more importantly than the pot itself, I think, is the potting medium. So, when you're planting, you know, planting containers, you're always going to want to use a nice, well-draining potting soil mix. It's not something that where you're going to be taking soil like out of your garden beds and expecting that to be a good medium for you. So go out and buy a bag of, nice potting soil. The trick with potting soil is if you lift up the bag and it seems like it's really heavy for its size, you don't want
it. Don't buy that
Yes, one. You want something that is going to be nice and well draining. But once you buy that soil, it's kind of infinitely recyclable. So you can save that soil and kind of reuse it from year to year.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Sarah emailed. She's looking for recommendations on a shrub that would only get about 3 to 4 hours of sunlight a day, but it would be in the afternoon against her house, so it gets hot there. Ideally, the shrub would get about 3 to 4 feet tall so it doesn't cover the windows of the house.
Sure. So some good shrubs for a kind of a shady situation but can still take that hot sun later are definitely hydrangeas. It sounds like a perfect opportunity for hydrangea. So you could either go with hydrangea arborescens. So that would be like the hydrangeas that die that you cut down from year to year, and then they would get to be, you know, 3 or 4 feet tall. There's some really nice new pink cultivars out. So there's like mini mauvette is one that you could look for. So they get those big, you know, either the white or the pink kind of dome-shaped flowers in August. There's also a lot of cultivars of hydrangea paniculata. So those are the woody hydrangeas that are being bred to stay smaller. So a nice one there would be like there's little lime. And those can also be pruned pretty readily to keep them smaller if you need to stay underneath those windows. Another nice option, I think, would be chokeberry, black chokeberry. Those are actually native plants, and they have the medicinal fruit, aronia, that is really popular right now. And they have stay short and have really great fall color as well, really very vibrant, glossy red and orange fall color. So that would be black chokeberry.
And back to hot areas, Susie called and couldn't stay online, but she said moss roses for containers in hot areas really well.
Yeah.
I like that idea a lot. Joanne in Lake Holcomb has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Joanne.
Hi there. There was a question earlier about wild rice.
Yes.
Oh, fill us
in. Well, we planted wild rice this spring, and the seed came from Kester's, K-E-S-T-E-R, Wild Game Food Nursery.
All right.
And they're in Omro, Wisconsin.
So from Kester, and what's the rest of the name? Just Kester?
Kester's Nursery.
Oh, Kester's Nursery. Sorry.
Right. And are you growing that in submerged in water, or what was the cultural information that they recommended?
Well, ours on Lake Holcomb, since it's controlled by a dam on the Chippewa River, the level fluctuates, so the water moves. And so we just threw in some seed by our boathouse, and we're going to see what it's going to do.
Oh, why not? And Lake, that's a beautiful lake, too.
Oh, it certainly is.
You're lucky, Joanne. You're a lucky gal. Thank you so much. I appreciate your call. You know, Bonnie emailed as well on this whole thing about the wild rice. Bonnie suggested contacting the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. She thinks they're in Ashland, and they have a seed and can help well.
See, you guys are getting me really excited about trying this now.
Yeah, we got Kester's Nursery in Omro, I think she said, and the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, GLIFWC, in Ashland, she thinks, and that's another place to go.
Very fun. I know the gentleman who does the Thai garden at Ulbrich grows some rice for pots, and he has, I think the cultivar is Black Madras, and so it grows to be maybe about 3 feet tall, and it has really dark colored foliage, and then he was able to harvest rice from it last year and then use those seeds to plant it again this year. Although I know that the birds are frequently pretty interested in it as well. So we're just always fighting some sort of critter over at Ulbrich. You got to outsmart them.
Well, somebody else wondered about, we've been talking a lot about sun, partial shade or shade, and she wanted to know, what does that mean, you know, in terms of plants that can tolerate? You say a plant can tolerate partial shade. What does partial shade mean?
Sure. So partial shade would mean that either you're getting, filtered shade. So it's kind of shady all day, but the shade is light. So if you had like a really high tree canopy, or that you have certain parts of the day that are full shade and then maybe another part of the day where there is some sun. So that would be kind of like a partial shade situation. I tend to avoid really making a lot of blanket statements like that, though, because there are so many situations, like somebody had said before, they got, shade for the whole day, but then when the sun comes, it's, from 2 to 6 in the afternoon, and it's like the hottest, brightest part of the day. And that's a lot different part shade situation than having, a big birch tree in your backyard where it's just kind of this gentle filtered shade all day long.
Makes good sense. Rory in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance. Hi.
Hi, Larry. I was wondering how your guest deals with some of the pseudoscience and kind of the woo that often falls with herbology. And if she has any good sources for kind of getting real scientific evidence of kind of the medicinal aspect of herbs.
I would say that you would be better off. I am more of a culinary aficionado, I guess, of herbs. And I more so just look at them as a nice, like, accoutrement to your daily life versus maybe something that you should be relying on for, like, bona fide medical conditions. So I can't really speak a whole lot to the, science behind a lot of that personally.
And I don't really, I was trying to run through my brain of a source of information on that, and it just is not coming. Maybe that's something we can look up. Jill, as my producer, as you listen, grab a note on that, and let's see if we can come up with something. Rory, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Just to go along with that, you like mullins.
I do. I think,
and, you know, I wondered if you had respiratory problems or because mullein as an herb is often considered to be useful for asthma, other respiratory kinds of things.
Right. And I think that even is just like the weedy, you know, kind of roadside mullein, verbascum thapsus. Mm-hmm.
That's mullein, isn't it?
Mullein. I just like them because I am always really interested in plants that are drought tolerant. And I think that we, you know, more so should always be looking to plant things that are not going to require a lot of supplemental watering. So I like to experiment with a lot of both just like annual and perennial mulleins just to, and they're just beautiful. They have that, you know, the real strappy, silvery leaves and those real elaborate, you know, spires of yellow flowers. So fun group of plants to just play around with.
And let's go back and review a little bit on what's coming up at the gardens and some of the events and things that people can come see. For example, right now you got some wonderful flowers blooming.
Yes. The crab apples are smelling great and looking, you know, just beautiful. We're catching the tail end of the bulbs. Pretty soon the, you know, the roses will be coming, and the, you know, definitely when you get into early June is really the high time for perennials. And we put a lot of effort last year into dividing and replanting and kind of filling up some sort of empty-ish areas of the garden. So, and one thing that we really focus on is we plant at a very high density. We plant a lot of plants close together because that prevents us from having to do so much mulching and
weeding.
Supports tons of pollinators because we just have such a huge diversity of plants and all kind of jumbled together and fighting it out, see what works. So it's so the beds fill in really rapidly. There's tons, you know, tons of stuff already growing and plenty to see, plenty to green. Plenty of green, and soon there will be a lot more flowers, too.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad I live maybe a five-minute drive from the garden. So it's for me, it's always fun just to stop in every once in a while. I have a membership there and so forth. And
that's the best thing about Ulbrich is, you know, we're a free public garden. So if you want to come, it's not like you have to feel like you are in making this big, you know, drop in $20 and now you have to stay there the whole day. It's like stop by and bring your book for 5 minutes and visit your favorite spot.
But you do have to pay $2 to get into your dome.
Oh, I know. It really breaks the bank, doesn't it?
It really breaks the bank. Aaron, it's always a lot of fun. Thank you so much for being with us today, and thanks for this treat.
Oh, I love sure. Anytime.
Beautiful. She is the herb garden horticulturist at Ulbrich Gardens in Madison, and manages the wildflower and pond gardens there as well. Great to have her along. We'll get her back, and we will do it again. Monday, our physical therapists are back, and next week on Garden Talk, Melinda Myers joins us to talk about managing water in the garden. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Have a great weekend.